Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Objective. Today it's me, Daniel, and joining me today is Morgan. Hey, Morgan, how are you doing?
I'm not too bad. I'm a bit poorly again. I've never been so sick in my life, but I'm able to sit at the camera, so that's the main thing.
Oh, the news are bad. You're feeling bad because of it?
It's not that, when your partner works in a school, every disease seems to be to incubate to the most to the nth degree in schools, so they come home to me.
Well, it's day 157 of the war in Gaza, and today we're gonna talk about basically something that I mentioned yesterday, that when Ramadan, I think technically started, I think it started on yesterday, but today is like the first day when they like have a feast or hold the feast. But yeah, it looks like Netanyahu has confirmed that IDF will go into Rafah. So we're gonna talk about that. Maybe I can just give a couple of quick news. Also, interestingly, Netanyahu even hinted at assassinating Hamas leaders, which I think it's very good to see, especially since not all Hamas leaders are actually in Gaza. So to actually, a lot of them are hosted either in Qatar, someone was even in Lebanon, some might be even in Turkey. So I'm glad to see that he is actually committing to completely rooting out Hamas. And then of course when it comes to this specific offensive, of course a lot of people are trying to condemn it. There was an interesting quote for the German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who said he's certain, well, one, he said he hoped for a longer lasting ceasefire in Gaza, and he also said that he's certain that the vast majority of Israelis and Palestinians want peace. Maybe we can talk about that quote a little bit later. But Morgan, what are your first thoughts when we heard the confirmation that Netanyahu said IDF will go into Rafah?
Well, I thought it was important, and I think it's important on a number of fronts because leaders make these kind of promises all the time that, this is we will do X by this date. Excuse me. And if it should get to this date, then we're going to go in. And there's no time of higher stakes than a wartime. Now, because politicians do this all the time with domestic policy, bringing down immigration rates, raising levels of care in the health system and so on. But it's really important that if you're going to do that in a war, that you stick to it. Now, I think it was in a sense misguided, perhaps, for them to have delayed the invasion of Rafah. So, I mean, again, just to give people a bit of the timeline, if they've only been intermittently keeping up with this, Israel invades in the kind of center of Gaza and in the north, and so pushes up into the north first and clears that area out, and then moves down to Khan Yunis. And we had a similar kind of fracas from the international community when the IDF was going to go into Khan Yunis as well, about not wanting to do it. Oh my God, what's going to happen to all the people? Then once they dealt with Khan Yunis, they pushed down into the south, which is where Rafah is. Rafah is right on the border with Egypt. And there's a bit more activity then in the north, because the IDF was primarily focusing in the south, but they went and dealt with that a little bit as well. So in a sense, Rafah is the kind of enclave where the IDF told the civilians to move to, and then of course the Hamas leadership, using them as human shields, moved with them. And so now the IDF has to go and deal with that and deal with an immense amount of scrutiny from the international community for that, rather than the just understanding what a sort of awful position it is to be in. And so probably Israel should have gone in straight away. Now, it's always tempting in these situations to say maybe there are military strategic reasons why they would delay. Maybe they're hoping to get the hostages out, which is probably why they did.
Well,
They hope they can maybe
let's
leverage that.
yeah, let's discuss why the wait. As you said, I think it was something like a month ago when Netanyahu said that, or maybe some other politicians said that, by Ramadan or on Ramadan, or I cannot remember specifically, the IDF will go into Rafah. And I think the reason for also giving like this specific date was to force some sort of negotiation, was to find some sort of compromise to basically get the hostages out. I think the first time we heard it, at least I think I was really afraid that nothing will happen until now, and then even the invasion will not continue. So, as I said earlier, I think it's good to see that he actually did commit to actually going in. He made some, as always, Netanyahu had some good quotes. So I think this was like referring to Biden. He said, look, it's either Israel or Hamas. There's no middle way. I mean, we have to have that victory. So yeah, I think we need it. Israel, like, if it hopes to, prevent future October 7 attacks, if it hopes to actually achieve peace in the region, I think it does have to go in. Something that I found interesting, and we will talk about that on the reality show about this, about what happened at Oscars. But what I found with a lot of people calling for ceasefire, calling for, Israel to hold back, calling for Israel to, not go into Rafah, I don't think they do, but it really seems like they are advocating for this sort of perpetual conflict, just waiting, Israel pulling out just at the gates. I think even Netanyahu used this quote that it's as if Allied forces, right when they were at Berlin, would say, "Okay, let's go back now. Let's not go and actually finish the job." Which basically this is what it is. More than, or I think a quarter of Hamas forces are in Rafah. Hamas is by no means finished, and Hamas leaders are still alive. I think I'm not sure if we know. I know that Yahya Sinwar, who I think was originally in Khan Yunis, then moved to Rafah. Now it was said that his family at least moved to Egypt. I'm not sure if we know whereabouts about him, but last time we heard about him, he was in Rafah. And of course, Yahya Sinwar was the orchestrator of the 7, October 7 attacks. So if you're hoping to prevent any future ones, capturing him at least seems like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, well, so a lot of the international community and a lot of the celebrities at the Oscars, which, as you say, we're going to be talking about on the reality show next, they have a lot of sentiment about protecting civilians and having a ceasefire. And I think what we have to say to them is that you aren't serious about stopping the violence. I think that's how it has to be put to them. Because anyone with a paltry knowledge of how this has happened knows that this just goes on in cycles, and that before Israel can finish the deal, it gets ground down into a ceasefire. And because of that history, that's partly why I guess we were worried that Netanyahu wasn't going to see this through and was looking for a reason maybe not to. But because of that, that's how it's gone. That's what's allowed it to continue. And if Israel is allowed to do what it's justified in doing, which is destroying Hamas, even if that results in casualties, then it can stop. And it can stop to the benefit of the Palestinians, if that's what you really, if you really care for them, and if you really have their interests in mind, as much as that you need to have a long-term perspective on it, you need to understand that their interests will be served by Israel rooting out Hamas, because Hamas runs an authoritarian little microstate there. So these people aren't serious about this at all, and this isn't an issue that they care about in their day-to-day lives. They've had all this success. I think clearly they feel some kind of guilt. Put on them either by the culture for their success, and they feel like they need to do things about social causes. And the kind of language that's used around Gaza, like the associations with apartheid and so on, that stirs in people a lot of positive feelings. Kind of, the end of apartheid and Nelson Mandela is a kind of a symbol of human rights and humanitarianism for a lot of people. And so people just go for it for kind of soppy, warm, emotional reasons. And they aren't serious about stopping the violence, because if you thought about it for more than 5 minutes, you would know that you couldn't just advocate for a ceasefire and then what? Wait and hope that the people in Hamas will not want to eradicate the Jews. So yeah, we need to tell these people that you aren't serious about stopping violence, and you can't get away with saying that that's what you're for.
Yeah, if we have time, we can talk a little bit about the ceasefire. But something I've seen a lot, especially coming from someone like Biden, and I think it was even mentioned in the article, he was saying to Netanyahu, look, I'm not against Israel. You going into Rafah is against Israeli interests. Like he's making this, he's trying to make a connection that, which I'm really struggling to understand. That basically Israel actually defending itself, actually destroying its enemies, is going to hurt it. And the arguments you usually see is, you're just spreading, you're just creating another generation of terrorists, which is what you always hear. And the history proved it already. Like, this is not how it works. You don't win wars by, negotiating with your enemies. You win wars by completely destroying them, completely destroying basically the spirit of the nation, the culture that made it possible. I mean, when people talk about, we should negotiate for two-state solution. Well, negotiate for whom? If you had an election today, Hamas would win. Not even the moderate Fatah, which also would probably be against any kind of two-state solution. Hamas would win, and they wouldn't go for two-state solution. And if they went, it's only so they could attack Israel with actual full might, and not just the sort of militants that they have on the ground. So we still haven't achieved the point where the Palestinian culture is changing and is actually willing to live side by side with Israel, or at least live side by side with Jews.
Yes, and a lot of the resentment has been consciously kept alive by organizations like UNRWA, and in so through the Palestinian education system and through the movements in the West which advocate for Palestine. So like diversity, boycott, divestment, sanctions, which we were talking about on Friday, I believe. Those movements completely take the kind of not just the pro-Palestinian perspective, but the if you want to say it, the radical Palestinian perspective, where the founding of Israel was a crime in and of itself, and it's a colonial imposition, and Israel needs to go away so that Palestine between the river and the sea can be free, and so on. And so since the radical version of that position is the norm, and it's the fault of a lot of people in the West for giving sucker to that point of view and saying, no, you're right, keep believing that. Even though you're antithetical completely to our way of life, and we wouldn't actually like to live in the country you're going to found, but you do you. We're multicultural. You have your ways. You oppress your women. You do all this stuff. Yeah, you do that. You be free. Never mind Israel, that you're going to wipe them off the face of the earth. You're the oppressed people. So yeah, that it's the case needs to be to be made that actually the culture needs to change and change radically.
Yeah, people still hold this sort of separation between, the government and the people inside. No, the whatever sort of it's hard to even call Hamas a government, whatever sort of authority that controls a certain geographic region needs some support of its citizens or of people they rule over. You cannot have, like, even authoritarian regimes require some sort of support. And whenever you see, the little resistance we see from the Palestinians to Hamas only came out after they completely failed. Again, I don't want to, someone quote me on my bad lines. Okay, I'm not even gonna finish that thought. But whenever there is some resistance against Hamas, is it the actual, like, people who want to peacefully coexist with Israel, or who just believe Hamas has failed? Just because you dislike the corruption of your leaders doesn't mean you actually dislike their ideology. You might still, I mean, the October 7 attacks were celebrated. You just think some other radical authoritarian should be in charge, not this one.
Yes. So I mean that's a fairly common phenomenon in a way. So in these authoritarian states, when they start failing, you do get resistance movements popping up, but there is a phenomena of resistance movements who are in a sense loyalist to the cause. They want to get the existing regime out of power because they think they're mishandling things, but ideologically they're not all that different. I've made the comparison before about Klaus von Stauffenberg, who tried to assassinate Hitler. And there was that film with Tom Cruise in it called Valkyrie that was made about him, right? And people who watch that film, I think, can probably come away with it feeling like, oh, if only he had been successful. Klaus von Stauffenberg was a German militaristic guy who would have kept the dictatorship, might not have oppressed the Jews quite so much, but still a bit, and would have done all this, right? So
Yeah, I mean, something I heard with this specifically was that, yeah, whatever like resistance there was to Hitler, even if they managed to overthrow him, I heard a lot of people that they might like maybe negotiate for peace with allies, but a lot of them, these negotiations were the way they were thinking of them. Okay, but we would still keep like our gains, right? We would still keep Poland, we would still keep Czechoslovakia. I mean, we would sue for peace, but we would still want these things. And you could see the similarities, to Palestinians when they say they want to negotiate for peace, but it's like, okay, but we want, the 40, the 67 borders, or the UN partition plan borders. I mean, come on, like, if you're coming to the table with that idea, you're clearly not like actual, wanting to have any sort of negotiation.
Yeah, I mean, whenever they say something about just returning to the pre-67 borders or the partition borders, those borders were rejected at the time. So that's just them trying to
By
get,
them.
yeah. So it's just them trying to get the best they can now, and they probably won't actually be satisfied with that. So what needs to happen is there needs to be a new generation, of young Palestinians coming up who radically don't want to be like their ancestors, who like see a new opportunity for a country they could have that's much more like Israel, that they could have a new, Gaza City, Khan Yunis, Rafah, whatever, that's more like Tel Aviv, and they could live like that. And now that's going to be difficult, but that's also not completely unprecedented in history either. Japan by the 70s was unrecognizable to the country that it was in the 30s, the 40s. So we
Yeah,
could be
and
sitting here in 30 years' time and be in such a different situation, although I'm not holding my breath, I have to say.
I mean, imagine if the Japanese people were like the Palestinians. Okay, we want to keep half of China, which we control, and all of Indonesia and all of Indochina. No, they were destroyed. They were completely crushed. I mean, if you took them from their biggest territorial extension to, just the Japanese islands, it's like few percentages probably. But by completely, destroying this sort of philosophy, that's what allowed them to actually, find their way into Western world. And yeah, that's what's problematic about having this sort of half as they don't really have a state, but they do sort of control themselves. I mean, before October 7th, because something I've heard from Razi, apparently. Before October 7th, you had a lot of Kazans actually going to work in Israel and then coming back with work visas. But actually, these people who went to work there are the people who mapped the areas in Israel for the October 7th attacks. So we see even with, just your regular Palestinians, they are all completely,
There's a lot of complicity amongst the general population. Yeah. It's any of these crimes which are done by governments, whether you're talking about the Holocaust or whatever. It's not right just to say that the literal people who pull the trigger are the people who allow it to happen. There's a huge number of people who act in kind of administrative roles who enable it to happen, and people who just know and don't do anything about it. And so, I mean, it's the idea that it was just a small number of SS soldiers in the concentration camps who perpetrated the Holocaust is nonsense. There were lots of people who gave up the Jews in their villages in Eastern Europe because they wanted to see them gone. And where did they think they were going and what was happening to them when all these Jews were disappeared, right? So general populations are very complicit in these kind of awful, awful crimes.
Yeah, I wanted to go more into the World War II, but I think we're getting a bit too much of topic. So let me just bring us a little bit back and talk about some more of Biden's statements. So he was asked by, I think it was an MSNBC reporter, if the Rafah offensive is a red line, to which Biden said, "It is a red line, but I'm never going to re leave Israel." Which made me a bit confused. We talked about Biden's red lines in the past, even when it came to, I think it was American deaths in Jordan, about how that was a red line, and apparently it wasn't. Now I'm maybe coming back and being a bit, forgiving of Biden. Maybe he doesn't know what it means, a red line. Maybe he, like, Because if he doesn't, then yeah, I mean his statements might make sense. But yeah, he like again, he says this is a red line, but we've seen some red lines in the past. So, and it looks like Netanyahu is not going to take any sort of like red line rhetoric seriously. He actually responded complete. I'm not sure if I have the quote, but in a sense, paraphrasing that, complete destruction of Hamas is red line for Netanyahu.
Yes, I mean, as you say, what does a red line mean for Biden then? And I think this is just another good example for people to see how Biden's statements about this are tailored more to his own electorate than they are by any consideration of what's right. So whether he privately feels outraged about the deaths of civilians and the need to get aid into Gaza, or whether he privately feels that Israel does have the right to defend itself or not, he has to say, at least from his perspective, he believes he has to say, that, look, there's a red line here of, I'm not going to just be pushed around by Israel, but also I'm never going to abandon Israel as our ally. And these are contradictory statements. What if Israel really doesn't give a shit? And sorry, what if Israel doesn't give a hoot and just goes in and kills a lot of people and doesn't allow humanitarian aid in? What will you do then, Mr. President? Are you just going to just do nothing? I hope so, but what does it mean if you have a red line about this? So, and then just maybe to tie up the previous point I was making, if you want that kind of future in 30 years' time where Gaza can be much more like Tel Aviv and can be a really nice people for a nice place for Palestinian people to live in, if you're an advocate of the two-state solution, then one of the immediate steps to getting to there, and which has to be done, otherwise you can't get it, is for the IDF to go into Rafah. Because unless the IDF can destroy Hamas, and going into Rafah is an important step in doing that, then you won't get there. You'll just get this stalemate continued. You'll get awful crimes committed against the Jews. Then you'll get the Jews retaliating and protecting themselves and then shamed for doing so. And we'll be in this sorry state in 30 years' time.
Yeah, and again, despite the statements of we don't support the Rafah offensive, but we do support Israel, again brings me to the point, like really seems like they're advocating for this sort of like perpetual conflict. Like, okay, we will not give Israel enough like moral support so they can actually destroy their enemies, but also we won't take money from or we won't we will support the Iron Dome, so Israel can protect itself, but not fully, just part way. It really maybe there's a lot of I don't know what to even call it. We talked about conspiracy theories, but this sort of there's this the military industrial co complex sort of like justification for everything, like everything that America does is it's just the military industrial complex like being behind it. Maybe
I
I'm
wouldn't be surprised if I could find some allegation of that within 30 seconds on Twitter just now, probably. But yeah, I mean, so as you say, the perpetual conflict thing, in their own minds, that's not what they're for. But it just has to be pointed out to people how frivolous they are, and that is what they're for. And I don't want to talk too much about what we're going to talk about in the reality show, but someone like Billie Eilish, who I like as a figure and her music and whatever, is utterly frivolous. Utterly frivolous is what you're doing and what you're saying. And Mark Ruffalo, I love a lot of his films, but you're a child in a very serious moral arena.
yeah, I'll never be able to watch Now You See Me in the same light again.
I mean, as if that is the one that you would go watch, but yeah, sure.
That is the best movie he was in. I don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, Shutter Island comes to mind as one that's way better, but
Sure.
sure.
Although the one I'm trying to remember the other actor from the Now You See Me, the one who played Mark Zuckerberg. If I saw him making some statements, I would be really hurt.
He was playing Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, in the social
Oh,
network.
Jesse, what's
Yeah,
I know who you mean.
yeah. And Woody Harrelson. If I also heard him saying some stuff, I would be much sadder than Mark Ruffalo. But any last thoughts before we were clearly pumped up for the to talk about Oscars? So any last thoughts before we go to the reality show?
Look, as terrible as any military action is, in the sense that it's going to bring about a lot of death and suffering and so on, This is really important, and it's really important for Netanyahu to have stuck by his word. And as I say, when we first heard about this idea that they were going to delay until the start of Ramadan, that really just seemed like a ploy to play for the time in order to run out the, not run out the clock, because in a sense that's what's happened, but to find a way to chicken out of it, right? And I'm glad that we're at this position where Israel seems to be able to finish the job.
So what I would only say that so we from what Netanyahu said, I don't think we have any close information about when the Rafah offensive is actually going to happen. Something he said is when it starts, it should take no more than 2 months. So that should be a plenty of time, especially the way Israel does it when it really tries to prevent any more civilian casualties. So hopefully it happens anytime soon, and hopefully they do manage to actually get all the Hamas leaders, and we'll actually see a complete destruction of Hamas and some actual future, mainly for Israelis, but obviously also for Gazans.
Yeah, well, and just, I mean, and just to anticipate what some people are going to say in the comment section, even if this isn't the total destruction of Hamas internationally, even if there's these people still in Doha, even if Sinwar's family has escaped into Egypt, if they can just destroy the operations in Gaza, that's such a huge step and such a huge victory. That's really important. So that's the main goal they need to achieve right now, even if the total destruction of Hamas is more long term.
And with that, thank you everyone for watching. We, as we said, we will be back with the reality show where we will talk about the Oscars. One main thing we will discuss is the statements from, I have his name, from Jonathan Glazer. We'll also discuss the little pins everyone was wearing at the Oscars, as we said, Billie Eilish, Mark Ruffalo, and we'll also discuss UNRWA a little bit more, since apparently they are finally running out of funds, and we really hope they will run out, and we'll really hope Western nations will not resume any funding, and it will stay completely cut off. So link for the reality show is in the chat. We'll see you there, and bye bye.